Welcome to episode 47 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is the day after August the 18th, 2012. I am Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my birthday partying brother, James Furlough.
Hey, happy birthday.
Thanks, man.
You know, it's funny, you were mentioning last week that you weren't going to give away your age. Remember that? But then earlier in the podcast, you had referenced the fact that you were, 3 years older? No, 3 days younger.
Than Usain Bolt.
Yeah.
Usain Bolt's 3 days younger than me.
Yeah, there we go.
He's 26.
Yeah, that's why I was like, I didn't hear it until I was replaying it, you know, doing the editing. And then I was like, oh, wait a second.
Dang it.
Astute listeners. And now, just in case they totally missed that, now they clearly did not miss it.
Yeah, thanks for pointing it out. Yeah, okay, I'm 26.
Congratulations.
And it's funny. Thank you. It's funny. I actually, there's a certain part of me it's like, even as a 26-year-old, even though some of the most famous people in the world are like mid to late 20s, like I am in the bell horn of people who understand tech right now, you know, like I am, it's okay to be my age, but there's still a part of me that wants to be the old guy in the room with tons steeped in history. So it's actually like, I wish for the sake of the podcast, I was 32, but hey, man.
I know for me, it was like, you know, you talk about feeling old and we're not even close to it, but it's funny when there was a point in time where I remember like listening to or watching NFL football and being like, oh my gosh, these guys are the same age as me. And these are like men and I am not. And now it's like, oh my gosh, these guys are younger than me. And these guys are men and I still am not.
What happened? Yeah, it was funny. Some new Hollywood pixie came out and she's like half
Hollywood
a decade younger
pixie.
Than me.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, girl, starlet, whatever.
All right.
And she's
I'm
like,
not cool.
Decade,
I don't know the words.
Yeah, that's okay. I feel like that's an old term actually. But I like to use retro, female terms, calling like, you know, I like to flash back to like babe and stuff like that.
Okay.
people look at me like, what? Who calls girls babes anymore? I'm like, it's kind of fun to be all like,
to be that guy.
Right. Exactly. it's my thing. Okay. But yeah, it's weird. It's kind of weird getting older, but it's cool.
Did you get any cool tech presents? That's, you know, let's see if we can even kind of make it semi relevant.
Yeah, so I want to talk about this because I didn't get it yet because I was kind of slow on specifying what I want, but I'm looking at a large external monitor.
Ooh.
And I kind of want to talk about it because I found a screaming deal on a really, 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 really well-reviewed off-brand monitor. And I know HP, you know, they do their thing and turns out you might work for them. And I know that you have more time, you know, looking at this. So I kind of wanted to talk about that.
Sure.
See if this is something to dive in on. So anyways, you know, this week, I think we should probably talk about what we usually talk about, which is the technology and the continuing corporate opera or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the part that we really love, the technology they're developing.
Yeah.
Before we get into the heart of the show, James can tell you that he works for HP and he doesn't represent them.
Which is all true. And so I should always be saying I when referring to HP. And if I happen to say we, I really meant to say I.
Cool, cool. Yeah. So if you want to follow me and wish me happy birthday or whatever, you can go to Twitter. My handle is at Matthew D. Furlough.
And I am at James Furlough.
And the show is at Furlough Bros. We've also got furloughbros.com, which is kind of the center of our internet constellation. It is the star of our solar system. But we've also got a Google Plus page and a Facebook page and, you know, all sorts of cool stuff. So check it all out. It's all interconnected and interwoven in a network of computers stored in the cloud. It's pretty cool. and it's got all sorts of cool clicks and links and stuff. Check it out throughout the week. Keep updated. It's good stuff.
I tweeted you happy birthday.
Oh, thank you so much.
There you go. I heard the buzz.
Because I noticed you didn't write it on my Facebook wall. Shh. You last night. That's like a new thing in the.
I sent you a text message and I called you.
I know.
What's that?
This is the go-go 21st century, James. If it's not on Facebook, it doesn't count. Actually, that's like totally the opposite for me. Like when people don't call me anymore and just Facebook me instead, like this is super lame. You're not a true friend.
I was going to say, if Facebook enabled some way for me to send you a cheap gift, wishing you a happy birthday, I'd be all over it. But it just doesn't exist.
Like a donation to a micro.
Yeah, I just want to give you like a micro gift card. That's all. $1, exactly. $2, you know, something like that. $1 per birthday, something.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, especially if you have 20 friends.
Yeah, we talked about this last week. It's a genius idea. Nobody does it. It's crazy. Whatever.
But. Yeah, whatever. So, let's dive into it.
Okay.
Enough talk about you, because it's not about you. I'm kidding.
It was about me yesterday.
Yeah, right. Which is why I said happy birthday plus one. So, real news. We talked a lot about HP last week because Meg Whitman and I are best friends forever.
And
I have a picture to prove it. And I was all like, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid and it was awesome. And, you know, tastes great. And this week HP continued.
Whoa, there's an explosion on my end.
Is that like an earthquake or are you just that clumsy?
I'm just that clumsy.
Well, how about this? Are you okay?
Yeah. I am okay. I'm going to be listening, but I'm going to mute myself while I fix this.
That is a large box. Just,
I know. you just keep on talking.
So those of you listening, it will be worth your while to watch the first 10 minutes of the podcast on YouTube. Whoa, dude, your screen went dark. Is that on purpose?
No, I clicked. I turned the screen off instead of muting.
You're amazing. All right. So you're on mute. Got it. So, anyways, you're listening. Fair enough. Anyways, as I was so eloquently talking about, until a disaster in your closet. HP had some more news today, or not today, this week, about what's going on with them. The first one is WebOS Palm. It's alive again. Or maybe the proper term is it's reincarnated again. But it's no longer Palm or WebOS or HP WebOS GBU or, you know, whatever name HP comes up with. They are now called Graham, which I think stands for something, but I can't remember. So it's a new company. They got a new brand. And they're leveraging the core strengths of WebOS, Enyo, and their cloud offerings, as well as, I'm just reading here, the firepower of our partners to create a technology that will unleash the freedom of the web. So, basically, HP has decided to...
Clarify me, so did HP sell, or did they...
HP, from how I understand it, like HP has a major stake in it, if not the only stake in it. And so it's like, from what I can tell, like HP owns it, kind of. I don't. These things are tricky. I don't know how they actually work. I'm not an accountant by any stretch of the imagination. But they didn't sell it, and nobody bought it. It is just now its own company. It was kind of like what they were talking about doing with the whole PC spinoff thing. That's essentially what it was, just a smaller version of it. And my guess is that either HP is just going to continue to have a a stake in this company, or B, there's some sort of payment plan where over time HP will get paid back the money that it was currently worth plus interest or something. I don't know. But they're totally separate. HP is out of the webOS game.
When I worked for a small tech startup over here in the West Coast, we were doing some cool chemistry. You probably, if you listen to the show, you probably know who it is. But since this was a little bit of legal trickery they were doing, I don't know how – I'm not going to disclose it at this moment. I don't represent them either. But they were – they did a similar thing where there was the parent company who, or I don't want to call it a parent company, but it was the technology company. They were the ones developing the patents. They were the ones that were selling, that were raising funds, and they were selling stock to investors. And then there was the company that was actually doing the work and manufacturing our product. Obviously those two things, when you're in the R&D state like we weren't in full manufacturing. Everything that was manufactured was for testing in R&D. So they were essentially the same company. All the engineers were hired by the tech side of the company, the IP side of the company. But the reason why they did it was because if something went wrong, it separated failures, and it allowed them to shuffle money and shuffle people, and it prevented some workers from workers at the production side from getting any of the sweet stock options that they didn't want to give to people that didn't have PhDs. Yeah, I mean, it was pretty hinky, but it was their way
hinky?
Of present hinky. Yeah,
hinky,
dude. What it hinky hink.
Hink?
You know?
No.
Hinky, yeah.
All right. Hinky.
Dude, these are like, these are not new terms. You might
hinky?
Have to Urban Dictionary that one.
How do we spell hinky? H-I-N-K-Y?
Yes.
Maybe.
I think.
Nervous or suspicious, acting suspiciously. Uh-huh. All right, you win.
Yes.
Go ahead, learn a new vocabulary.
You gotta trust this guy. So that makes sense. I gotta imagine that's the same thing. It's sort of, if there are huge losses, you know, it probably allows them to write off certain parts of WebOS and you know, basically save money.
Yeah. So maybe. I did a little further reading, and it says that it's separate. It is a separate company, but it's under the HP funding umbrella.
That sounds like what was going on there.
Okay.
You know, it was basically, this is so difficult. Basically, Calera was paying for Moss Landing Cement Company's work. Calera being the tech company, Moss Landing Cement Company being the production side. And it was like, Moss Landing Cement Company didn't make any money. We didn't sell anything to anybody except Calera, who was our, you know, and basically they just gave money to Moss Landing, but it was a separate corporate entity. It was owned by the same people, but it was its own thing. It had its own identity, which for protection reasons and tax reasons gave them a huge advantage.
So these guys are going into stealth mode for as long as it takes, it sounds like. And since I think they're technically private, I don't know how that works. They're just gonna do what they're gonna do. And cool. We may hear from them again. Maybe not.
Maybe not. Yeah.
We'll see. Also, coinciding with this news, and they waited like a day or two, I think, to announce it. I don't have an article just because I know about it. So there it is. HP has also formed a new GBU, which is their global business unit. That's the word HP uses. So there was the WebOS GBU, and now there is the what are they calling it? It's the Mobility GBU, whose job is going to be to create products for the mobile environment.
All right,
I think tablets,
which is what we just
phones.
I'm gonna say which is, we discussed this last week. That's what Meg Whitman thinks the near future is.
Yeah, but I just. But they just sold that. I don't get it. I guess I maybe it means that HP has decided that it's doing hardware only and wants to get out of software, and you know, clearly WebOS is only software,
right?
Or something. But even still, you'd think, I don't know, maybe they're going to use the WebOS software in the products in addition to Windows 8.
I get the feeling that there's somebody. I've got the feeling that there's some executive somewhere that's saying, "Look, I think this has potential. Let me take it and try to do something with it. And if we can turn it into something in the next year or two, then everybody's happy. But otherwise, you just write it off as though it were nothing, you know?"
Or it's almost like you know, the previous CEO, Leo, totally messed up the whole Palm thing.
Yeah.
You know, just got rid of the hardware, the one part that you were just like, whoa, what? And then Meg comes along and goes, we got to be playing in this space. And they were just like, well, unfortunately, WebOS is one big pile of mess. And
right.
And she was like, cut it. Let's start over. You know, it's faster and cheaper and whatever, cleaner for us to just let them go and start over. Take a mulligan.
Right.
And we'll just try again. I sounds like, I don't know. It's weird. It's so anyways, that's what HP's been up to.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool. It'll be interesting to watch that over the next few years.
Yeah, see, that's the problem though. It's the next few years.
Yeah, it's not what's gonna happen next week.
Though I mean, yeah. It sounds like, I don't even know if I can. Maybe not the next few years. Maybe it'll only be the next couple months, and we'll go from there. I'm struggling to remember what I know and what the world knows, but which I'm
right.
not like well, I'm not I, like super I, secretive or anything. You know, I don't have privileged information, so it's not like, you know, if I know it, it's, you know what I mean. Most part, if I know it, everyone else knows it either because the email
right.
leaked.
Yeah.
You know, or yeah. or I read the announcement like everybody else. So,
right.
But anyway, so it sounds like it's something's within this year has already been in the works, and this group is kind of just going to house it and then keep going from there.
Cool. Hopefully something exciting will come out of HP. It'd be a
That's
nice
what we're waiting for.
yeah. So, Matt Inman. He's the writer for The Oatmeal. We talked about him a while back. Webcomic, poster maker guy. He's pretty funny.
Not suitable for work, just for the record.
Yeah, that's duly noted. He's a big fan of Tesla, which is cool to me because I was a Tesla hipster. I was a fan of Tesla before anybody else was. I was a fan of Tesla before it was mainstream. And Matt Inman has done a couple comics about him. Big, you know, really likes to talk about what he used to do and set the record straight, as it were, because what's his name? That one guy, Edison, Tom Edison, was kind
you don't
of
even
a
need
jerk
to say
to
his
him,
name.
And
you just let it go. That guy.
Exactly.
We
just
all
let
know.
It go. He was, well, you know what the worst part? I'm always conflicted because Thomas Edison was like the Steve Jobs of the early 1900s. Like this brilliant businessman dealing with the super modern technology and was just a ruthless business guy. And everybody thought he was kind of a jerk, but he was like exalted as this like great innovator, which is, you know, like exactly what Steve Jobs gets credit for. The only difference is that I think what makes it different with the difference with Apple is that instead of, you know, like with Edison, Tesla, where Tesla did all the amazing engineering and then they became enemies and they ran different companies, in the tech space it was Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak, and they were great friends until they died and they both became insanely profitable because of the invention. I think that's the only reason why Jobs will go down in a different character or in different category as Thomas Edison. But
you're smart enough to make friends. Got it.
Exactly. And it's sometimes it feels like it's the only friend he kept from when he was a younger guy, but he, you know, he's not an idiot. That was for sure. And it's funny. It's entirely possible that he read about those two when he was young and just kind of paid attention that one.
Maybe.
But yeah,
he never
maybe
mentions
not.
It.
That's true. That's true. And he talks about everything. But anyways, the long and short of this is Tesla's labs in Upper State New York are up for sale, and the state of New York has said that it costs like $1.5 million for this property, and New York State said they'd match half of it. So if you could raise enough money, so there's been this big campaign through what's the one website?
It's one of yours.
Yeah, Indiegogo.
Yeah.
To raise money, and they're up to like 700,000. They need to get like 850,000.
Really?
All sorts of cool gifts that you can get. Yeah, I mean, they're doing really well. But it looks like they're probably going to get the land. And once they get the land, then they have to build a museum on it, which will be crazy expensive. He's part of the nonprofit. He's not leading it or anything, but he's just kind of, he's the voice on the internet saying, hey, let's raise money for this. And because he gets like 20 million views a month on his website,
I was like, yeah, what a cool place to be in life where, you know, you have a big enough audience where you can do things like this and, you know, actually make an impact in the real
exactly.
world, not just with cats.
Yeah, exactly. And one of his offerings is if you pay $33,333, if you make that big of a donation, he will do an actual independent blog post on your company, what you guys do and how you work. So, James, if we have $33,333 lying around, I think there's an investment the Perla Bros Tech Podcast should make. You're shifting around. Yeah, I don't have that much money either.
I guess we need to do a blog post and start up a fundraiser so we can.
Right.
it's viral.
I think we need to get sued at some point too. That's right. but I don't know. Pretty cool. Pretty cool project. If you got a couple bucks around, lying around, and you want to invest in remembering one of America's great engineers. That's probably a good way to go about it. At least secure the lab. That's the big thing, is that right now the lab still exists. If somebody else buys it, they'll tear it down and turn it into condominiums, which would be an unfortunate loss of history. but yeah, that's all I got on that.
That's it.
So earlier this week, you picked up an article. I noticed it too. But
I was going to say, look at this. You highlighted it. I was like, wait a second. It's got my name.
I just wanted to make
your highlight.
I wanted to make sure that we talked about it because I thought it was important.
Yeah, totally. So Tuesday, leaked out or I don't rumors. I don't remember how these things happened.
It was a rumored. It's a leaked rumor. I think it's what it is.
That
it's an unnamed source.
Microsoft Surface for Windows retweet. Tablet is coming October 26th for, drumroll, $199. We'll call it $200.
$199. $200.
Because if you're in California, it's a little bit more than $199. If you're in Oregon,
it's terrible.
It's exactly $199.
Yeah.
So, anyways. That's the news.
Yeah,
Surface,
man.
$200.
$200 Surface.
Same price as the small Nexus S and the Kindle Fire.
With a full version of Windows on it. I mean, that's
RT,
pretty.
Yep.
RT, yeah. So tell me, James.
Yeah, we got to clarify that part.
Yeah. Tell me, James, what do you think? Do you think Microsoft is going to sell a $200 tablet computer?
So everything that I've read says that it's possible, but it may not be the smartest move for the shaft to be doing.
Yeah.
Because obviously, like I just mentioned, there's competition out there in a tablet market that, you know, is at or around the $200 price point. So from a competitive standpoint, I guess it makes sense. I did read one article that was just kind of like, well, here comes the race to the bottom for the tablets.
Right.
Getting there fast. Didn't take very long at all. Just like the netbooks. And so, you know, so it could be that. You know, so that was kind of the reason why they should. Oh, and the other one is a lot of people cited the fact that the that it would probably be at a loss if it were at $200 because they didn't think there was any way that they could make it for that much. And, you know, people were like, well, they sold the Xbox for a loss at first. No, they're still losing money in that division. So,
yeah. And that's one of the dumbest – one of the biggest problems with that is that there is no free hardware on – or software. Well, okay, there's – no, there really isn't. I mean, okay, there is some. There is some. But the primary use of that – system is to buy $50 pieces of software.
I'm totally with
you. And they get a cut on every single one. People don't buy $50 pieces of software anymore outside of Enterprise. And the problem is that Enterprise is going to buy a full version of Windows 8. Oh my gosh, it's already coming. I'm like, you ready for this?
I'm ready. Yeah, don't stop.
This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. This is they're not going to sell $200 computers. It's just not going to happen. I've heard all sorts of arguments about it. Okay, it's possible, but number one, it's at a loss. And one of the big lessons that you know everybody is learning is that you can sell stuff for a loss, and you can move tons of units, and you don't become the world's most valuable company doing that. Actually, your stock price goes down across the board in the computer and electronics industry. The only company that stock price is still skyrocketing is the one that, surprise, surprise, doesn't sell any hardware for a loss. Right. They make crazy profit margins on all of their hardware. And if Apple or if Microsoft is taking a page out of Apple's book, it's just not going to happen. This is some of the worst kind of rumor mongering. And I think Microsoft wants this to go away as soon as possible, because what they want to do is they want to sell it at a profit. They want to sell it above the – they want to sell it at a comfortable price where they make a good margin, but it gives room for companies like Asus and HP and Dell to come in underneath them. They don't want this to be – what they want it to be – and I was thinking about this earlier this week. You know, people – okay, and this is the example. Actually, this happened this morning. It just really solidified it for me. I went to Costco this afternoon with my family and our family.
Did you get a Polish dog or a piece of pizza?
Polish dog. Oh. Just the Polish dog, not a Polish dog and a pizza, which I used to do, and I think it's part of the reason why, you know, I'm big. but you can buy jewelry. You can buy nice jewelry at Costco. And they have this big advertisement sign on the top of their thing that says, you can buy a 6.5-carat diamond engagement ring at Costco.com for $300,000. And I laughed and I said, who would want to buy a $300,000 piece of jewelry from Costco? And, you know, it's funny, like you think it's kind of ludicrous, but the whole point of doing something like that is you're basically setting up what's called a straw man. You're setting up a artificial barrier. And if you're trying to sell high-end goods, what you want to do is you want to sell the high – you want to set the high-end barrier so artificially high that everything else looks cheap by comparison. It's just the super best, nicest. Now, some people will go and buy that, but you're not expecting very many people to. The classic example for Apple is the Mac Pro. No, they don't want people buying that. That's why they never upgrade it. It's a straw man. It's just supposed to be this super nice looking, crazy, stupid, expensive computer. Right. But it makes everything look cheap by comparison. What they're going to do with this and what they're trying to do is they're trying to set the standard of, this is what a super nice thing is. This is their eye candy. This is their advertising ploy. They want people to come into the store and look, wow, this is super nice. And then they're going to look at the price and go, oh, I can't afford this. But you know what is really nice? This HP tablet. It does all the same things. It looks pretty much the same, but it costs $200 less. That's what they're going to want to do with these. And I've
So what if they had like an intro one for $200, which is what, you know, this could be about, where there's no keyboard, there's no software, it's small RAM, you know what I mean, like barely works low end. What was it, like Home Basic? Is that the one where everyone's like, do not get that one?
Right.
You know, like that. And they will have it, you know, ratchet all the way up to where you could theoretically get a $2,000 Surface where it's got the keyboard. It's got, you know, I don't know, 64 gigabytes, 128 gigabytes of RAM. It's got some super fast processor in it. It comes, lucky for you, bundled with all sorts of stuff, including Office and the works. And
this is my thought. It would have to be a 7-inch tablet for it to be at $200. There's just absolutely no way they're going to sell a 10-inch tablet for that much. And I think the 10-inch tablet is too small for most Windows software. You know, most things that are going to run on RT.
Yeah, but we know it's not a 7-inch. We know it's a 10-inch. Well, you think exactly. There's a 7 well, down the pipe oh, that we yeah, don't know about.
Yes, yeah.
And that's what it's referring
to. That's what I'm implying. Right, that's what I'm implying.
Okay, all right.
And because I just don't, it doesn't fit any else of their strategy. It's like I've heard people saying, well, they need to push the RT because it's this new architecture. It needs new programs. So everybody's going to have to write all these programs. So it makes sense for them to sell it super cheap because then there's just this explosion of it. And now the platform
of a user
exists.
Base and it makes
right.
sense to develop
but the
for
reason
it. Okay.
Why that's the dumbest argument, and we bring it up all the time on here, is that .NET is a virtual machine that's designed to run all of their programming languages. And so basically it's like Windows, you know, they're not going to write a separate version of Word for RT and what's it called? And Windows 8. Whatever. What they're going to do, their Wintel version, what they're going to do is they're going to write one copy of Windows in C#, compile it into the .NET framework, and then run it on both just as well. The only reason it can't run on the phone is because the phone doesn't have enough RAM and processing speed, but it will have it has the software package to do it. If you could open up a phone and add RAM and give it a better processor, it'll run it just like any of the rest of them. That's the whole point of this whole new platform that they're doing. So there's no real competitive reason to do it other than to just move a ton of them and block out the rest of the competitors. And one of the big things
is the thing that like, which I get that, but if they're losing money on it, this is one of their big bread and butter products that would suddenly disappear. I mean, that is a huge, huge, I can't overstate how huge of a gamble this is for them.
Yeah, if they do it, and it's a dumb gamble. That's the thing. It's like they're going to fight anti-competitive problems because they're basically selling it without the cost of Windows on it. Everybody else has to buy Windows. Everybody else, you know, Windows or HP doesn't get a free copy of Windows when they sell you a computer.
Right.
That's how Microsoft makes its money. So all of a sudden, and the reason
which,
why
by Apple the way, they won't be getting for this, by the way.
Right. And yeah. And yeah, perfect. Yeah. Furthermore, they don't get that money. They need that profit margin somewhere. I mean, it's not just a loss on the hardware. It's a loss on the software. It's such a every time a person goes out and buy one of these computers at $200, if they ever exist, they would lose money on the hardware, packaging, R&D that got it to the people, and that person wouldn't go and buy an HP and buy a copy of the Windows software.
What do you think they got deals where you're literally going to have like 30 installed apps on that start screen, and that's how, you know, they're making all the money on the back end. Just like
people are gonna,
you know, HP and whatever. I just recently helped a friend install a new HP computer, and you know, sure enough, you start it up and oh my gosh, I don't even know how many icons there were. It went all the way down the side plus some more to start with, you know. And I mean, that's how HP makes its money, you know, advertising basically. Could you see like Microsoft? Yeah, technically it's at a loss, but man, they make so much because they wanted to fill up that start screen that they got 30 different companies to all pitch in a couple bucks each one.
That would just be such a face bashing to all of their partners. It's not even funny. If they're doing this, this is one of the craziest
things
I've ever seen.
Maybe they figure if it works, cool. You know, less partners they have to mess with.
Okay. This is my thought. So I put this note in there. And this is a week of predictions. I kept coming up with things that I made up my mind that this is what I think is going to happen this year, next year. This week. I don't know what was going on. I was just on fire.
Next year. Well, you were having a birthday. Year. You were contemplating your mortality. Go ahead.
Exactly. I think that next year, everyone in Microsoft and abroad, I think people are terribly afraid of having their first year-over-year no growth in PC sales. I think people expect that the so this is the thing, right?
Yeah,
What
okay,
drives
explain it
PC
to me.
sales? Okay, so what drives PC sales? Well, it's people need PCs. They need a new computer. And PC year-over-year growth has been really, really stunted the last couple of years, almost exclusively because of the economy. People don't have money, so they're making
This
they're
is
stretching out.
including, excluding the iPad.
Excluding the iPad.
Okay.
And Android tablets.
Right. Well, yeah, sure.
Because it's barely anything. But yeah, so basically year-over-year PC sales have been barely growing, laptops, desktops, notebooks, whatever. And it's all because of the economy. But Windows 7 is basically, everybody agrees, is the best version of Windows that has ever come out.
I would agree.
OS X is the best version of OS X that's ever come out. Everybody is super
Sure.
jazzed about these operating systems, and yet nobody's buying computers. And I think the problem is that the economy, nobody thinks the economy is going to get better in Q4. Nobody thinks that. They're talking earliest Q2 next year, things start to take off, which means that Windows 8 is going to have to make its mark in the first 2 quarters. It's going to have to set everybody's expectations when nobody's going to go out and buy it, and it's going to get horrible reviews. Nobody's going to want it. And the reason for this is not because it's a bad operating system, but because it's unfamiliar. I have long argued that the problem with Windows Vista ran into is everybody kept saying, "Well, it's not intuitive. I don't get it. It's not intuitive." That's the big problem. It's not intuitive. And I kept correcting people, saying it's not that it's not intuitive, it's that it's not familiar. If you got used to it, you'd realize it's actually a very good operating system. It's just unstable as all get out and keeps crashing, and it ruins your life all the
Yeah,
time
I
that way.
guess, but I
And
mean, a lot of these new tablets and phones, I would make the argument that iOS and Android, especially iOS, is extremely intuitive. I mean, I didn't hear any complaints of people going, "Oh, this is unintuitive," and I didn't have to explain to anybody that it's unfamiliar. I mean, little kids instantly get it.
Okay, you're right.
That's right.
You're right.
I am right. Thank you.
You can make intuitive pieces of software. You can make it so that it's easy to use. People get it very quickly. But one of the big things, especially with Windows, I think one of the big things is that the early adopters of iPhone, were really tech savvy, and there were a lot of people showing you how to use it, and there were a lot of commercials showing off the different
Well,
gestures and
and there
stuff.
weren't as many features, right? I mean, it was, you didn't have to worry about folders. You didn't have to, it's just one set of icons on one or two pages. Just one page, right? Because there weren't even apps to begin with. I mean, it was super simple. And now, unfortunately for Microsoft, they're walking into a world where, these tablets and phones, they are now more complicated, and they can't start with just like the simple, here's three buttons for the start, instead of one start button, now there's three, and each three do something different. Now we're going to add more. Now you can customize them to do your own thing. Now we have a store where you can buy more buttons. Oh my gosh, we turned it into an entire page. Isn't that convenient for you? They just, they had to go whole page, all customizable.
Oh my gosh, yeah. It's nuts. And one of the big things that one of my what what's really is getting to me is that it's like every review I read is basically saying, "No, it's a good piece of technology. It's a terrible UI for new users. People are going to hate it." I think people are going to hate it. It's going to be unfair. I'll bet it's I you know I haven't I've only used it really limited on a really limited basis, but it's one of those things where I get the feeling that just what's going to happen is it's the same. People are going to go, "It's Vista but worse," I think is what people are going to say about it, which is like the
Wow,
last thing
that's a
that
pretty
that's
bad
the
insult.
that's the last thing you want people talking of saying about your operating system right when nobody is buying it, because what it means is that it's a very small group of people that are going to have a huge impact on expectations. And what's going to happen is nobody's going to buy the computer in Q1. Nobody's going to buy the computer in Q2. They're going to keep thinking, "Well, maybe something will get better." And then all of a sudden it's going to be Q3, Q4. They're going to hear a bunch of bad reviews, and all of a sudden nobody's going to buy a computer in Q3 either. And you're going to have a
Yeah, but they're gonna
combination
need to
of
buy a computer, so what are they gonna get?
I don't know. iPad,
they're still going to be
else.
Giving it. They're still going to. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. That'll be. Well, it's still a huge bet. Because if they can make it 3 years, I think they'll be fine.
Right. I think millions and millions and millions of people are going to buy these computers.
Totally.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm not arguing that people aren't going to buy them. I'm just saying it's the first year you won't see year-over-year growth.
Oh, okay.
And as far as Wall Street's concerned, they're going to sell as many computers in Q3. They're going to sell a few hundred thousand fewer computers in Q3 of 2013 as they did in Q3 2012. They just got done selling. And it's going to explode in Wall Street. It's going to dunk their share, their price of the share, because Apple's going to keep growing.
Yeah, but does Microsoft really care?
I think Ballmer cares.
Nah, I don't think he does.
I think, oh man.
Other than for bragging rights, I don't think he really cares.
Maybe not, but I think that what you're going to see is you're just going to see a terrible year for Microsoft, and if they do this, with the $199 RT, it is simply to increase install base because they are afraid that not very many people are going to buy it. They're just going to make them so affordable that you're stupid to not buy it, and they don't really, and they'll just shrug their shoulders and say whatever happens, it happens. We need to do this. We need to sell this many computers, and our partners can't handle it. But I think it's, you know, one of the big things is
there's never no coming back. I mean, you can't slowly ratchet up the price over time. Once you're there, you're there.
Right. And the other thing is it's like they talk about the fact that there's an article that I added, and I'll just throw it in there here really quickly because it's appropriate. But it's the dumbest statistic of all. There's this Forbes magazine said, oh my gosh, the iPhone business alone, a part of Apple, is bigger than all of Microsoft. Everything they do, there's more revenue just in the iPhone than all of Microsoft. And you like want to just sit there and go, Forbes, that has never been Microsoft's claim to fame. Your guys are a business magazine. Their claim to fame is the fact that they make more money than anybody and spend less money than anybody. They have no revenue stream because their stuff doesn't cost anything to produce. You know, it's just R&D and programming. There's no reoccurring manufacturing operational cost to it. Once it's made, it's a stupid CD. It costs $3 and shipping prices. It's not a complete piece of hardware. Yeah, of course, you know, Walmart does unbelievable amounts of gross sales a year, and yet their net is tiny compared to Microsoft's.
Yeah.
And you sit there and go, and you know, Microsoft, it's like the whole reason why the iPhone is such a big deal is not because it sells more than Android. It's because Android doesn't make any money for anybody, but iPhone makes gazillions of dollars for Apple. It's one of those things that Microsoft is walking into a game where people only make good money when they sell at a profit. They do a great product and they sell at a profit, and basically, they'd be cutting one of their major profit streams out from underneath their feet in order to lose money on it. It's like, what money do you expect them to do this with? That's the thing that gets me. Like, if they sell enough computers, they could just run out of money. They're not like Apple. They don't sit on a pile of $100 billion that they can just go and lose money on. They literally can't do this. It's one of the most ludicrous rumors that people are giving credence to. I think it's, you know, I don't know why. It drove me crazy, and nobody was listening to me because they just like, no, Microsoft is great. This makes sense. You guys aren't thinking about this at all. This is so dumb. And it's not even that it would be a bad idea. I actually think people are wrong about thinking it's possible.
So what happens when Microsoft comes out with a $200 tablet?
It's going to be a tiny 7-inch one with nothing. Nobody's going to buy it. It's going to be it's going to be such a piece of garbage that you've never seen before that people are going to mock it, and it will be a bigger joke than the operating system itself. Wow. That's the only way they would do that. There's no way that it would be a decent piece of technology if it's at that price. you know, it's just, it's crazy. It's crazy. It's crazy. It would be overpriced at $200 is the only way they would do it, I think. And if they actually decide to lose money on it and do it right, it's going to be a disaster for Microsoft, I think. It's just gonna, I think Steve Ballmer would lose his job over that. You know, you might see a big use install base, but it would just wreak havoc. You know, and to just kind of throw a curveball like that, I think it's dumb. That's my opinion.
All right.
Want me to go into my next rant?
We'll see. Yeah, dude, keep it going.
So this goes even further, because I saw in another article that basically was talking about Microsoft, and this is actually not necessarily criticisms of Microsoft. I hope that that's not coming across. I think Microsoft is making, well, okay, other than usability UI stuff, I
Well,
think
it all
Microsoft is
depends on what their pricing actually is, right? I see. In terms of
exactly.
pricing, since they haven't announced anything, it's hard to criticize them.
Exactly. I don't think they've. I think that this is a lot of rumor and stuff that people are getting completely wrong, that Microsoft won't get completely wrong.
Okay,
I
got it.
think there is a good strategy, and I think they're going to go with it. High priced, high quality machines, set the benchmark high, make a healthy product or a healthy profit on, you know, machines that very few people are going to buy. Do what Apple does, basically.
We shall see.
Yeah, and so furthermore, people are talking about how basically Apple's gonna, this next article was a, they're talking about the fact that Apple's gonna lose their
It's
business
another
to
Forbes, by the
Microsoft.
way. Man, you're
Yeah,
just
dude,
loving on
Forbes, they
them.
were, oh dude, yeah, I've clearly do aren't am not a fan of them right now. Basically what they were saying is like Apple's going to lose to Microsoft in the 2010s the same way they lost in the 1980s. Because what they're like, basically their argument is that Microsoft is coming up with this holistic enterprise solution, and they're working with IT departments to get it right, whereas Apple is just forcing, quote unquote, forcing their products upon IT departments by creating cool, innovative products that people want. They bring their own devices to work, and then
Yeah.
they have to integrate it. And I just want to shake my head at like that kind of tech reporting, because it's like you guys aren't paying attention to what happened in between the 80s and the 2010s. It was this little thing that was called the internet that like completely changed tech engineering. You know, and one of the greatest inventions that nobody ever talks about, which is the language of Python. This idea that you could have tons and tons of different servers that are running Linux, they're running Windows, they're running Oracle software, they're running all sorts of different software. They have all sorts of different architectures for their databases. They have all these different crazy things, and they would have one standard thing in common, which is HTML. And basically, it just would be a method of talking to each other, and then slowly they would build that up into a full way of displaying information, and it becomes more and more dynamic as time goes on. But the whole thing is tied together basically by this really awesome computer language called Python. It does the hard work of getting disparate systems to communicate together. They literally call it the duct tape of the internet is its nickname, because it's like you've got all these pipes that go everywhere, and they're like carry different information, different data types, and they communicate in different ways. And Python's this really dynamic, powerful language that allows you to basically fit those pieces together. They're the glue that actually binds everything together in the end. And one of the big things is like in the 80s, it made sense to have a holistic system, because what you needed is you needed all your data types to line up in the end in order for everything to work seamlessly together. But today, that's like not even pretend necessary. It's like, yeah, I've worked in companies that have extremely dynamic, powerful, and affordable IT departments that basically what they, you know, they're running, they have a POP server through that on, they have a POP mail client on Google servers. So it's an open system. It works really well. They have their own, you know, at Calera.com was one of them. Everybody had Blackberries and iPhones, and Android wasn't really popular with them at the time, but people with Android phones, and they all seamlessly, your calendars function, your contacts, your emails, yeah. They all work great together. Everything's updated seamlessly. There's no need for a Microsoft backbone. But the crazy part is all of your Microsoft client stuff, like that one program that they have.
Office.
Thank you. No. What's the one with the email? Outlook? I can't remember this. Thank you, Outlook. I like use this program all the time. Outlook, just a brain fart. Outlook. They've got this program that basically, that works seamlessly. They all work seamlessly together. Most of what everybody does. All of these programs now talk to each other. They communicate, and they're like, they work really, really well together and very easily. Yeah, there's a little more upkeep for the IT department, but it's not like the Microsoft of the 1980s was this beautiful, easy to use, nothing ever went wrong system. No, IT departments are notorious for having just headache after headache after headache after headache because of, even with systems where all the technology is the same technology, because ultimately, mm-hmm. You have to do something different. You have to do something special, and that throws everything off. But the only difference between then and now is then there wasn't any real glue to kind of make everything work together well. Nowadays, there are all sorts of open standards, open languages that are literally designed to fit these different pieces, these different architectures together so that they fit really well and they work great. And computers run so fast now that it doesn't matter that it's inefficient.
Yeah.
That's the big thing, is that inefficiencies are no longer as big of a deal because computers are just they're way faster than the inefficiencies. They just power through it.
It makes sense. It's funny. You talk about how there are still issues. I know that with an HP, it upgraded to the latest version of SharePoint. And I was talking to this girl who had an internship with HP. And her job was literally to field and log calls of employees upset about SharePoint. And, with the ultimate goal of someday addressing those issues, but her job was just make sure that employees felt heard.
that's awesome.
That was what she did for the summer. So, it's like, there's one, right? I just think that's a great point. It's not like what they've offered before has been all hunky dory. No problems. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I know
very, very few people. I know most Apple employees I know aren't completely invested in one ecosystem or another. It's like, there are other products that make sense for other,
I think there are very few people. Well, okay, I don't know how I want to say this. If all people are worried about is cost, okay, they're invested in one. And quite honestly, they're not happy anyways, because we know that if you buy the cheapest computer, it's going to be fun for like 6 months if you're lucky. And then it's just a headache, and you're going to keep on to it for two, maybe three years if it lasts that long, and you're going to hate those, everything after 6 months. I've watched it over and over and over again. And so those people are in one ecosystem, and they hate it. They're not the people you want evangelizing for you. And they'll self-admit, I know nothing about computers. I bought this one because it was the cheapest at the store, that kind of thing. And then – but people who actually, they care, totally. They – jump back and forth. I don't think I'll ever just be, I don't think I will be, just in one camp or the other. No, I'll definitely jump around. I don't know. It's weird. I think the other fun part about this article is they say it at the end, but I don't know. Well, so this one line here, they say like Apple's enterprise philosophy seems to consist of one sentence: I'll sell you anything you want as long as it's for the consumer. And I don't know. They just, what they're really doing is bashing Apple for not having an enterprise strategy or even caring about the enterprise at all. And that's why they think Microsoft will win, because they care about the enterprise. And, arguably there's a lot more dollars there. But I don't, Apple has never come out and said, we want to be the market share leader. That has never been a goal of theirs.
All they've ever wanted was to make more money than everybody else. And guess what? It's crazy they do that.
And what makes it hard is that if they do become the market share leader, they'll tell you. They'll toot their own horn. They're not idiots. It's why not, right? I mean, come on. I was at an event this weekend, and it was like, the goal is to have fun and, be safe. It's not to win. But for the teams who won, they genuinely celebrated their win.
Yeah. I just want everybody to know I won.
Yeah. That's not the point of this, but we won.
Yeah.
and it does feel as good as you think it would.
Yeah.
And so I get it. So that muddies the water, right? Because then people are like, oh, they have a strategy because they talked about it. No, they don't. Or if they do, it's not a primary strategy. That's not their driving force. But
right.
That'll be interesting. I don't know. Is it possible? And maybe you already said it, but, is it possible in this day and age for one ecosystem to just trump all ecosystems?
I don't think so. I think that's what my point is. I'm not, because you're right, if you have a dedicated strategy and you put all of your money and energy into creating these, entire ecosystems, you might be successful in pushing Apple back out of some of those businesses. The problem is that I don't think people want that anymore. And it's not necessary, more importantly. It's just not – and because it's not a necessity, you can do what people want. It didn't make sense back in the day when you bought one license of – people would make one copy of their accounting software. It would only work on one operating system.
Yeah.
And they would just push to whichever one, and then it became this rapidly accelerating, we got to stick with Microsoft because it only works on that. We can only do it on this one. But you sit there and go, no, most big packages nowadays, most big software guys write dedicated pieces of software for Apple. It's like the Curiosity, the Mars Lander, like a bunch of the computers in the NASA in Houston, I guess it was, they all had MacBooks. When I went to the NIF, National Ignition Facility, in where we're one of America's most expensive lab, the half of the computers in the control room were MacBooks. And you sit there and you go, that's significant.
Though, just to be fair, I would say where I work, all of them are HP machines.
Yeah. That's like, that'd be like walking into Apple and having them be like, why did Apple stop making their servers, their X servers? Everybody got so upset when they did that. And then Apple came, and then you find out that 6 months later, Apple was building this massive, massive data center. And guess what servers they weren't using? Their X servers. It looks awful to not use your own technology. So, how about we kill that product line? People were upset, but you shrug your shoulders and say, what are you supposed to do as Apple? I'm sorry. they realized that they weren't making the best product. And they couldn't pretend if they were going to spend $1 billion on somebody else's product.
Well, and honestly, I think it was something where they just didn't get excited about it. They were like, honestly, servers are boring. Yeah, there might be money there, but let's be real. This is not something where at least this is for me personally, and I think Johnny Ive would agree, you don't stay up until 3 a.m. thinking about the design of a server.
Right.
Maybe you do the first one. And that's interesting. But okay, it's done. Now it's in a closet. You move on.
Literally in a closet, not just figuratively. It's true. No, and I mean, there's a whole slew of reasons why, Apple. But I think more than anything was they weren't using their own. But, but for most companies where most of these sales are made, you've got diverse systems and people, it's so funny. My boss right now, he hates Apple just just like on principle.
Really?
Because he's a fan of, yeah, well, he was a Microsoft fanboy in the 80s and never really got over it. But he has an iPad and it kills him. It kills him to have to use his iPad because he goes, it's just the best. There's nothing out there that
That's
even
awesome.
Is in the same ballpark, and I need something like this.
Oh, okay.
It drives him crazy. It's so funny. Like
it's
he's the best. He's so,
I hate it.
Yeah, he's so conflicted by having to use an Apple.
Who was that?
iPad.
I was talking to someone and they were bashing Walmart, and they're like, I hate Walmart for their practices and, you know, blah blah blah, you know, for all the reasons you would hate Walmart. And I was like, what, do you ever shop there? Like, oh yeah, all the time. Their prices are the best. Like, what? What?
Well,
and he goes, I even eat the McDonald's there because it's really convenient and close to work. It's like, what? What?
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah, it was awesome. I was just like, that is, yes. Classic. I love consumer logic sometimes.
And say, I love how quickly we betray our ideals.
I do, yeah, it's awesome. So it's fair.
Oh yeah, I can't. I'm not gonna hold you against it. I hold it against you too much.
I will still point it out. And
oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Just as long as we all understand we're hypocrites in this.
Yeah, it was awesome. But yeah, well, you know what? I am glad to see that the Microsoft and Apple rivalry is heating back up again. You know, because it's been way too quiet for way too long. It's been like this whole like Google distraction thingy going on over here.
Yeah.
You know, and then you got the Amazon wannabe hanging out over here. It's like it's a cool kid, but not really. You know.
Yeah, he's trying to be in the club.
It's in the circle, but it's not really like.
You know. Okay.
Not contributing to the conversation.
Amazon is the Butters of the gang. That really is it. This is a great kid. I really love him. But he's there all the time. He just kind of flubs it whenever, you know, you love him because he's totally rooting for him. They ain't nothing wrong with
him. We all know about him. Yeah,
exactly.
I like
it.
Oh,
man. Oh,
I want to know who the Cartman is. That's got to be Microsoft.
Yeah.
Let's just keep it. Yeah. Oh, here we go. Here we go. We got the South Park analogy working.
Yeah. And man.
All right, we're going to stop there before we get ourselves way down in the weeds.
Yeah, some of our audience might not have ever watched South Park.
Fine.
Yeah.
And I don't recommend it, just for the record. Other than maybe like two shows. Direct message me if you want to know what those two shows are. Outside of that, nah, not really. But all right, anyways, cool, man. Microsoft, they're back. On October 26th is kind of when this all goes down, right?
That would be a pretty fun show.
Yeah, and then, you know, then it'll take like 2 years before we actually know, and then it'll take like a decade before we really know. And that's okay. So I think it's time that we switch gears to some mobile.
Okay.
For now, and then we'll, you know, switch back, I guess. But I thought this was interesting. Square, our friendly card swipe device that we heard for the first time on Furlough Bros last week. Remember, I took my device and I recorded what the sound sounds like. There's some banging going on. Do you hear that on the... No, just me? All right, cool. It's pretty big time. It's like they're having a pillow fight in the other room. Sweet.
That's funny.
I guess, until you realize I own the place, and I kind of get a little nervous.
That's right.
Yeah, it's all fun and games until the wall gets broken.
Right, until it costs you money.
Yeah. So anyways, I'm sorry. I'm getting distracted by the banging. Square, the card swipe company, they made an announcement this week that I thought was pretty interesting. So the way that they typically charge is whenever you swipe the card, because theoretically you're the merchant, you're the seller, right?
Yeah.
Collecting the monies for whatever you're trading, good or service. Typically what they charge is a 2.75% of whatever it is. So if you charge $10, you would get some small amount, which would be like 2 cents, right? Am I doing my math right? Or is it $2? $2 sounds not way too high. That's $20. If you did $100, it would be $2.75. So we could joke down. Wow, it's it's late. Okay, come on. It's not the weekday. I don't have to know how to do math. So anyways, so they normally charge 2.75%, no matter what the amount is, which someone for me, like if I were doing microtransactions, you know, selling coffee, that kind of stuff, not so bad, I guess. And they actually got rid of the way that it used to work, like with PayPal and others, is they charge you like 30 cents flat fee per transaction plus 2.5%, 2.75. And the way PayPal works is if you're doing very few transactions, like the first $10,000, it's like 2.95. And then as you slowly go up, it goes down to like 1.9, I think, eventually. So, you know, obviously more volume, better discount, that kind of stuff. So Square made it super simple where they were like, well, we're getting rid of that flat fee and it's just 2.75% no matter what. Cool. Which is fine. But now they introduced a new one where – if you process less than $250,000 in payments per year, which I do.
I can say that's very easy to do.
Yeah. If you do, they will charge you a flat monthly, not annual, monthly fee of $275.
Really?
Yeah.
Which is not bad. Cool.
So I think, did they do the math? Excuse me, on here. So what that means is how can we compare the? It's 275 times 12 because I'm going to assume you're going to keep it is $3,300. So how many? how much would you have to process in order to get charged $3,300 at the 2.75 rate?
Wait. Say it one more time.
I'll just do the math. 0.0275. Okay. So if you, I don't want to say it. If it's there's a sweet spot here, where if you are charging somewhere between less than 250 but more than $120,000, this 275 per month is cheaper than doing their 2.75%.
Huh.
Yeah. Kind of cool. So,
that is kind of cool.
Yeah, so I think what they're doing here, pretty smart play. And at first I was like, wow, that's interesting. They're just being less greedy. And maybe they're hoping that, you know, there's going to be a bunch of merchants in that, what I would call the medium range, you know, your medium size-ish to be doing a $250,000 or a little less than that a year. You know, they're really going to go after them because they're like, cool, love it, especially when it means that your cost can be predictable. You never have to guess. Yeah. You don't have to try to scale it with your sales. It's just is $275,
right?
Which is cool. It's kind of neat. But then I was so I had that thought and was like, all right, you know, cool for Square, good for them. But then I was reading another article on TechCrunch that was talking about how they're saying payment data is more valuable than payment fees, and so Square they're. I'm going to assume that it was inspired by Square because they mentioned them along with everyone else, but Square was the only one who did something this week. So anyways, I think they're heading down this track of, you know, the current point of sale systems are dumb in the sense that it has a credit card transaction and, you know, how much you bought, but there's no, like, real customer data. You know, when we were working at Arby's, those point of sale systems, they were dumb. In the sense that,
well, they literally, you typed in how much money you wanted to take off the card, and then you would slide the card. And so the card data was completely separate from the actual what they bought. You just knew the total amount, which isn't really useful if you're trying to figure out if, you know, Bob Newall with card number 673, whatever, you know, what kind of sandwiches does he tend to like? Well, if you can put those two things together, you figure out, oh, he likes beef and cheddars and potato cakes. So we should advertise whenever there's a beef and cheddar and potato cakes deal at an Arby's near him. You know, that.
Yeah. Or, you know, we've noticed that about once a month, he decides to get mozzarella sticks, not just the regular curly fries. Can you say that?
Oh, man.
Regular curly fries? You know, not yes. just the curly fries, which are... Oh, anyways. you know, so, hey, we should suggest this to him more often because clearly every once in a while he's in the mood for it. And so
right.
and you can start to do that stuff. So they were talking about how... you know, Square, and I would, you know, all these ones who are connected online and really replacing point of sale systems, they are going to forego the fees, it sounds like, in favor of collecting this payment data and then some magical way figuring out how to make money off of that in the future. Because they'll be able to either anonymously aggregate it all together and sell that data to others. They might be able to let companies subscribe to a, hey, you know what, for cheap or for free, yeah, swipe the card, no big deal, don't worry about it. But if you're willing to pay a little more, we'll kick you back some. You know, we'll give you a Facebook integration or something like that. I don't know. You know, so they could maybe be setting themselves up for premium services down the line. Or just realizing, you know, there's other ways that we can make money and we can spread the cost for merchants by giving it to other advertisers, you know, let them
right.
do the direct mail and stuff like that and base it off of payment history, not just search queries or page views. You know, it's actual swipes of the card, which, you know, when you're talking about customer intent, that's where it's at.
Yeah, that's a pretty solid way to go.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting. This whole payment space is really starting to heat up, which I think, you know, Visa and MasterCard, they just win the entire time.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, yeah.
So your screen is now black. And I'm going to guess that's because your internet connection was getting bad. And you were getting ready to die.
No, wait a second.
Whoa, hey.
Hey, can you see me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Kind of.
Whoa, what the heck? I turned off my video and my audio came. And have I completely lost you? Oh, my gosh.
You're breaking in and
this
out
is super
bad.
Irritating.
Keep going. Try talking some more.
Okay.
I think you're all right. Tell me about how. Tell me about the old Zuckerberg.
Oh, Mr. Zuckerberg. So, have you been following the Facebook stock prices?
No. You're also starting to break up again. Can you try just going black for a little bit and seeing if that helps? Oh man, well you did that, but I can't hear you, so there you go. Bummer, man. What? Okay, I'm gonna have to edit this whole thing out.
What? Can't hear me?
Oh, now
James,
I can.
You can't hear me
now? I can.
Okay, can you hear me?
Still
this
yes
is so frustrating. I'm so irritated right now.
I can hear you.
Yeah, okay.
Go
can
ahead.
You turn your screen off, please?
Okay.
Turn your screen off.
Well, everybody, we're turning the screen off.
Turn
Enjoy
your
the YouTube video.
Screen
okay.
off.
I'm doing it. Camera off.
Yeah, sorry about that, guys. Oh, wait, I can hear you now. Can you hear
Good.
Me?
Yep, could the entire time.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay, sorry, I didn't mean to get all antsy, but anyways. So stock price has gone down. Not what Facebook supposedly wanted. Well, I think, okay, so this is crazy. So you said you haven't heard anything yet, right?
No.
You don't really pay attention?
Nah.
Okay, so.
Stocks are dumb.
I like to pay attention because there's a financial, political side of me that I don't bust out too often on the show. But I pay attention for that reason, but it's like not related to the company and the technology they're developing at all. Like, if you understand how stocks work, it's like the worst indicator that you could possibly imagine. It's largely just gambling, but I still think it's interesting because sometimes it does have a direct effect on the people working in the company. And I think in Facebook, it's going to, one of the big things that's happened was, so Facebook made tons and tons and tons of money, raised all sorts of capital, built this great product and had a revenue stream coming in. And it got to the point where there wasn't really any reason for them to go public. They didn't quote unquote need to raise funds,
right?
Which is usually why people go public. Well, and we talked about this in the show, that the whole reason they went public was to basically pay back their investors and their employees who had great stock options. Mm-hmm. It was literally a method of getting money. And so they had a unique strategy with their IPO, which was basically, we're going to set the price high. We know it's not going to sell. We know that it's not going to go up very much. There's not going to be the initial pop, but we don't necessarily want that, because what we're trying to do is we're basically trying to make a quick buck for our investors. Our stock doesn't have anywhere to go because our company is just on its growth course. There's no big deal here. And so I think they actually set it at a unique kind of trying to be clever. And then low-end investors, mid-grade mutual funds got involved in the mess, and suddenly it became this just crushing thing where, it started to fall and fall and fall. And I think it was getting away from them when it kind of dropped into the $25 price range. And then all of a sudden, it's been long enough where the very earliest – stock options have now vested, and now employees can sell their stocks and go and buy a new car with this money. And they decided to sell off all their stocks because they didn't want it to get too much lower. And so it just started turning into this spiral of people making bad investments on bad investments. And I've said on the show, and I've said in my personal life, and I've met my recommendation to, obviously we don't give real recommendations. This is just for fun, what I'm about
give
to say.
Real recommendations.
but I've said, wait till it hits its bottom and then buy, because it's a good long-term stock, but it's going to fall. And I was saying that when it was IPOing. I mean, that was my thing. Like, don't buy IPO day. Wait for it to bottom out and then hold for a couple of years. Because it's a company, I really believe Facebook is like Google, in that they're a technology company and with a humongous user base. And as they figure out how to monetize that, they're going to make tons of money and keep growing, and they're going to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Right.
I don't think it's just a passing fad. But the thing is that, the stock price has nothing to do with what the company is doing, in reality, and except for these are the people who own the company, technically. So there's this like real conflict of interests that come up. And basically what what people have decided is that the person that you can put all of the problem with the stock on one person's shoulder, and his name is Mark Zuckerberg.
of course. The $20 bill stops with him, huh?
Exactly. He's the rich guy. He's the guy with all the voting shares. He's the CEO. He's the chairman of the board. He's the guy who wears the hoodies to Wall Street, and Wall Street hates him for it. I think a lot of times, us tech kids, we forget how snooty they are on Wall Street. But they all wear suits, and they all wear $1,000 suits and ties still, because that's who they are. They're snooty. I think they look awesome, but it doesn't mean that they're not snooty. And Mark Zuckerberg, I'm better than that. Oh, man, I'm too cool for this. And so what I think is going to happen, and I think you might see this in the next year or two, as people are going to start really, really calling for it, is they're basically going to say, how about you go ahead and step down as CEO? How about you let an adult take over for a while, which I don't think is really going to meet his style. But I think he's going to get the Jobs treatment, more or less.
But who's going to kick him out?
That's a good point. Maybe the Jobs treatment is not the right way, but maybe the Who's the CEO of Google right now? I can't remember. I can never remember if it's Page
I think
or.
it's Paige.
Okay, yeah, Larry Page. He, you know, they basically they did what Steve Jobs did, which was I can't be the CEO of this company. I'm too young. I'm too much of a pirate. I don't want to be this guy. So Jobs hired John Sculley. They hired Eric Schmidt. Google it is hired Eric Schmidt. And those guys took other roles in the company as innovators, as leaders, until they were quote unquote old enough to take over the company. Steve Jobs obviously got kicked out of Apple by John Sculley before he got old enough to take over and had to come back later. Is this like, you know, big return of prominence? Larry Page, that deal has worked out really well for him, where he was a big leader, big innovator. Eric Schmidt was the guy in charge. He dealt with the investors until Page really was ready, and now Page has taken over as CEO, and now he deals with investors and whatnot, and innovation. And I think what you're going to see is there's going to be a real desire to watch Zuckerberg not be the CEO anymore, not be the guy who deals with Wall Street. And I think it's going to be something that Zuckerberg is going to be all right with, is basically what they're going to tell him is, we hate you, and we're going to take down your company if we can. You
Well,
know.
where it will really hurt him is when he tries to hire somebody awesome and they go, "Why?" He goes, "Oh, I'll give you stock options." Like, thanks, but no thanks. It's not worth anything. You know, I don't think the
Right.
stock's going anywhere because you don't pay proper attention to the people who gave you money. You know, and that's when it's not going to be the investors who off his head. It's going to be the new bright young talent coming up going, "No, sorry, you don't have anything you can offer me other than a big
Yeah.
paycheck." You know, and that's
Which
not.
is nice, but I can become a multimillionaire if I go and work for Apple or Google or Microsoft, you know.
Yeah, so I mean, that's 'cause, you know, giving away stocks and options, I mean, that's a big form of compensation, and he stands the potential to lose that to retain top talent.
Right. One of
And
the re
yeah, I don't
yeah,
know. That's
one
so I could see that's where I would see the, you know, he's going to have to start paying attention to it or hire someone to pay attention to it for him.
Yeah. Well, one of the big things, and one of the things that I, and actually one of the things that makes me feel like a tide is turning and Zuckerberg might be, you know, stepping off his throne, just to, you know, at least coming back down to earth with the rest of us, is I guess at one of the latest things where he ended up on Wall Street, he did have a suit on, maybe not a tie, but it was like he didn't have the hoodie. And that was like a really big deal because, you know, obviously that's his thing. He went to all those depositions where they were trying to take his company from him in a hoodie. You know, he just was like, it's, you know, he's an interesting dude, and I don't know, but I think it would really help the company to allow a guy like Eric Schmidt step in, somebody who has a similar vision, who understands the company, is willing to work with him, but let him take over the, you know, the day-to-day operations, and just let, you know, Zuckerberg really do his thing, which is to, you know, make awesome products and, you know, come up with ever better ways to, you know, scavenge your life for sellable information, you know. That's overly harsh, but
Nice.
I don't know. I could see him. I feel like most people are predicting that happens, and I
When
don't.
do you think it'll happen? Like in the next
Oh man,
year, or is this like a 2 year thing?
I wouldn't be surprised if they start courting people in the next couple months, and in the next year have picked a CEO who's, you know, who's willing to do it, you know, to be the Eric Schmidt of Facebook. I think it would be, I think it would un I think you would see a huge, if they were to announce tomorrow that there's an older tech dude, somebody with some sort of a proven track record stepping in as CEO of Facebook, I think you'd see the stock jump $10 tomorrow. That's how big of a deal I think it would be for Wall Street. And I think that most investors are going to tell him that, and they're going to say, and what they're basically like you said, when he starts to realize that having a depressed stock price is really going to make it difficult for Facebook to continue to thrive. You know, the big thing is that he doesn't own the 50% of the shares, but he owns 50% of the voting shares, which I don't even know how that works. but he still is the voting, you know, he's still the voting majority holder. So it's like, you know, he still would own, not necessarily own the company, but be quote unquote in charge of the company. But you know, having a CEO come in that at least acts as a balance to him, I think would really, really help their stock, which would help the company in a more holistic way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And well, yeah.
Makes sense.
That's my opinion.
All right. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. So
we will see. Thought. All right.
Am I up again? I am up again, aren't I?
I think you are. I think
you're okay,
are.
So and then this one, man. I was in one of those moods this week where there were a bunch of small things that were actually happening, but for whatever reason, I was thinking big picture. And
once again, you were contemplating your mortality.
Exactly. And Apple has been coming up because the iPhone 5 is out there. It's like I tweeted an article where this guy, he does an analysis of this video of what the iPhone 5 case would look like, and he talks about why it makes sense from a manufacturing perspective, and he makes an argument for, no, this is the real deal. It's the 4-inch longer screen, the widescreen view, and he talks about, I actually made a really compelling argument for the unibody case, and he critiqued it basically, and the end result was it's actually a really brilliant design, and it sounds just like something that Johnny Ives would do. And you're like, oh, okay, I guess that sells me. but basically, people are like, one of the websites that I frequent is Mac Daily News. They're all Mac all the time. They're huge fanboys. It's funny, and every once in a while, they try to present balanced articles where they'll criticize Apple, and it just seems really strained. It's kind of funny, but they had this one article that I came across. It's the article is titled "The King Is Dead. Can Samsung Slay Apple and Steal Its Crown?" They're basically saying, you know, without Steve Jobs, Samsung might be able to move into Apple's place. And it sort of turned into this holistic conversation with friends online of like, has Apple lost the magic when it lost Steve Jobs? And I just keep like, I'm starting to get like all antsy and frustrated because it's like, I sit there and go, no. No, Apple hasn't lost the magic of their technology. You know what Apple has lost with Steve Jobs?
What?
It completely lost the reality distortion field. And I think that is it. It's the manipulation of the media. It's just the fervent excitement for a product. It's like, you know, people are like talking about how like, man, this new iPhone, like if all it is like a taller screen, that seems awful. Like, well, you're gonna have to do more to impress me, and I just laugh, and I'm like, dude, the iPhone 4 came out with a camera on its front, and people were foaming at the mouth because Steve Jobs called it something cool. I mean, they came out with a slightly improved voice recognition that was a little more clever than their old one, that doesn't work for a lot of people a lot of the time because they don't have good enough internet connection, and people were foaming at the mouth for Siri. Like, the last really radical introduction that Apple did was the original iPhone. I mean, that was a big departure from what everybody else was doing. After that, it's all been iterative, pretty expected, inclusions. Allowing third-party software was the second generation one. 3G and faster was your third generation one. A front-facing camera was your big innovation on your fourth one. Your fifth gen. Wait, what are we on? What did I skip there?
I don't know. We're on the 4S. We're a 3S, right. 4S.
4S is four. Well, 4S is the iPhone 5, right? Is the fifth generation. The right. iPhone 5 would be the sixth generation. So your fifth generation was Siri, which was, it's cool. I actually think it's a legitimately cool technology, and it is in a lot of ways a better offering than what else is out there. And its quality of results, especially. But it's still an iterative improvement, and not, it's something that they bought from somebody else. But everybody's like freaking out because, oh no, it's just going to be an iterative improvement. You know, like, why can't we have something big like the iPad? That was so radical. And you're like, no, it wasn't. it was a big iPod Touch. Or rather, the iPhone was a scaled down iPad. I mean, like, there's like, you just sit there and like, I'm like super frustrated because I'm like, you know, people got so wound up by the reality distortion field that they actually thought that these technologies were anything more than iterative improvements. And the thing is that they were very impressive iterative improvements. It's like they were complaining about the fact that, oh, the MacBook Pro is not really an impressive show this year. I'm like, are you kidding me? This is the biggest resolution display ever. I mean, it was a feat of engineering that is just like, it's unparalleled in by anybody else. Nobody else can sell a MacBook Pro Retina display. I mean, like, it's incredibly impressive. But because it's just a higher display, man, that's just not that cool. Why can't you guys do something that's really impressive? I'm so frustrated by this new attitude that's coming out because it's like, I feel like I'm not unique in this, but there are a lot of people that could see through the reality distortion field and yet were still excited about what Apple was doing. And now it's like, but there was evidently, I guess this, I should have seen this coming, but, you know, tons and tons of people didn't appreciate anything except the reality distortion field. And so they end up with this, like, you know, thing where all of a sudden it's the same cool, amazing engineering things with the still great, amazing, sleek design, and they're squeezing out way more potential than anybody else out of the same hardware. But because it doesn't have the job spin, nobody's happy. Drake's just like, oh man, I'm going to be so irritated if sales start to fall. I'm going to be really irritated if the iPhone 5 doesn't do well because it's not cool enough, because they didn't present it well. And, you know, and just like, they didn't make it pop like people wanted it to, even though it's going to be like, it's going to be the 4-inch screen. It's going to have way more real estate. It's going to look great. It's going to have, you know, it's going to have all your new updates. It's probably going to have some sort of point of purchase, you know, the foundations for that. It's going to be really cool. And the other thing that really drives me nuts is that people are complaining about the fact that iOS 6 doesn't have anything exciting. Like, why would I even install that? And I like shaking my head thinking, honestly, every iOS that's come out before, when it was just during the announcement, nobody was like super excited about, or like only real crazy fans were really excited about the next generation during the developer preview, because the developer preview doesn't have the really exciting feature that will sell the phone. Right. So people who are judging them based on the developer preview, like, really, really take your head out of the sand, man, or put it back there for about a month. Just whatever you're doing, do the opposite, because it's not working for you. It's like, I don't know. It's going to be disappointing as it really sets in how much of Apple's success was not due to the fact that they have good technology, which they do, but because of the reality distortion field that people didn't understand, and what was really there. And now it looks different because it's a different person presenting it, you know? That's gonna bother me a lot, I think. I have to prep myself emotionally for it. I don't know. Am I wrong in any of this? I don't know.
You know, honestly, I am not sure. Other than, I mean, the article, at least it felt like it brought up some good points. You know, just talking about the different hardware and the different, you know, recent missteps, such as, you know, just like the sales staff inside the Apple stores and, you know, that whole debacle that happened and, you know, something where everyone kind of admits like, well, that probably wouldn't have happened if under Steve Jobs. But it did, you know, and so you get things like that.
Well, you know what, though? I think that's really unfair. Ping was awful. It was a horrible misstep. Even Steve Jobs himself was, you know, like, was furious at the team that did Mobile Me. Like, it's not like missteps didn't happen under Steve Jobs. Like, huge missteps happened under Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs hired John Scully. I mean, it's...
Yeah. I get what you're saying. Right. Yeah, no, he wasn't perfect. I also agree with you. He definitely did have a reality distortion field about what he said. And I think the best that I've heard it described as was recently where he was able to flip back and forth between, you know, his opinion and not, you know, not carry the baggage of previously thinking the opposite of it.
Right. And people let him get away with it because it's Steve Jobs. You know, he went from,
you see this stuff happen in other places. So I recently, trying to sell my truck, and I got a text message one day from a guy who said he saw my ad on Craigslist and, you know, wanted to know a little bit more about it. And so I'm like answering questions about the truck over, you know, literally text messaging back and forth with this guy. And then he gives me I asked him, you know, hey, when do you want to come by and actually look at it? And he just kind of moves right past the, you know, that question and moves on to a different thing. Talking about how he's going to pay me and want to know if I got a PayPal account and if you can transfer the funds that way. And I actually asked the question a couple times, and each time this guy, he didn't even respond to it. It was just like, he had a set, you know, line of questions. Eventually got down the path where I went, okay, clearly this is a scam. Someone's trying to get money out of me. The whole like Western Union thing was a definite giveaway too. And,
right.
You know, where it was this particular one was, hey, I put money into your PayPal account, but I overpaid you. You need to take out $900 and send it to the shipper so that they can, send me the vehicle, which I was like, okay, so you're not going to come look at this thing that you're about to spend multiple thousands of dollars on. So that's what that particular one was. But the point of what I'm saying is these scams work, obviously. I was even able to do a search on this person's name, and it's apparently used this name more than once. But they work, and one of the things that they can get away with is like not answering those questions and just
right.
pushing through with, you know, their line and moving on to other things. And there are people out there where they forget about the fact that, oh yeah, they aren't going to come look at it. You know, that's weird.
Right.
But you get caught in the moment and you start down that, you know, that path. And I think this is going to be really weird because of what I'm about to imply, but I think Steve Jobs does a similar thing.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people agree that, yeah, he does a similar thing. Well, it's like the whole 7-inch iPad or, you know, 7-inch tablets. You know, Steve Jobs, you know, bold face, just said if they're going to be dead on arrival, people aren't going to use them. They're half the size of the iPad. It's a terrible design. They're just – everything would be too small to use. And, like, years later, somebody finally pointed out the fact that you realize that the iPhone is like half again the size of.
You know what? I honestly,
it works pretty well.
I honestly don't think that he connected those dots at the time, just like none of us really did. He was thinking to run full-blown iPad apps on a 7-inch screen, as opposed to trying to blow up iPhone apps onto a 7-inch screen. You know, I feel like it took a while, and someone had to tell him that, and he went, yeah, okay, fine, that could work, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it's one. What I think is what gets me is, You know, and maybe he was right about those, the tablets that were coming out at the time, that they were really too small to compete with the iPad, is what he was, I think, is what he was saying, which is true. They won't compete with the iPad because they're too small. That doesn't mean that there's not a valid space for them using the same style of interface. And it's like it became very obvious now that, you know, now that the 7-inch iPad is on its way, you know, it's going to be here in a couple months. It's becoming very obvious that they are stomping around, letting everybody who'll listen say no. But actually, Steve Jobs behind closed doors was like really, really into this, at least at some point. You know, maybe not early on, but like he definitely became a fan of the idea. He wanted to. He was okay. You know, as long as it was done right. He was, yeah, let's do this. Let's make a 7-inch iPad. And you know, and you sit there and you go, that's something that Steve Jobs, Steve Jobs was able to do. And I don't think he's unique in it, but he was really good at it. In that he could like tell everybody, no, this is the worst idea ever, and just let everybody argue about it forever, and then finally at the end be like, actually, it's a pretty good idea. But only because we do it right. You know, you know, it's like multitasking, you know. It's just that's such a classic example of Jobs. Like, no, third-party multitasking is the worst idea ever. It'd be terrible. And then, like, they do it, and they're like, well, it only works because we do it right. Which, you know, is interesting because they actually did do it different. And I think for the technology at the time, you know, even to this day, it's the right way to do it. Where it's partial multitasking, and it conserves resources better. But as time goes on, processing will, you know, the devices will get better and get to the point where they can handle full real
Right.
multitasking. And Apple will introduce that at that time. And Steve Jobs would have been completely behind it. And you know, yeah, of course. I know. I said it was like the worst thing ever. And I threw out a thousand reasons that sounded really good. But you know, yeah, half those reasons were just bold-faced lies. Because, well, not bold-faced lies,
No,
but
because they didn't have a good solution at the time. You know, just
right,
like I think with the
exactly.
whole cut and paste thing, they were like, well, the current solutions don't work, or they're ugly, and so they were like, so we're not including it. And I mean, and that
Right.
wasn't one where they ever said like cut and paste is dumb. They just kind of, you know, similar to my scam example, they just kind of ignored that question for a while, and you know, until they had an answer, and then finally they went, okay, cool, we can do it. And I think the same was true for multitasking, but that was one where, for whatever reason, they just couldn't ignore that particular one and, you know, and let it slide.
Right.
Or I should say that was because they
Right.
had a better reason than just, oh, we haven't figured it out yet.
Right. Yeah. And well, and I guess one of the things that I'm gonna, you know, to finish this is, or my last thought on this is not necessarily to say that Steve Jobs lied about things, but he exaggerated things. Where it's like, if he thought, well, there's not really a good solution right now, it was the worst idea ever. And as soon as they figured out a solution that might work, and you know, it was just a legitimately, oh yeah, you know, that's a good idea. Instead of being like, you know, that's a good idea, and being tempered about it, and like, you know, yeah, let's be reasonable, let's move forward, let's see it all the way out and make sure it works. No, as soon as he thought that there was potential for it to work, it was the best thing that had ever been designed, ever. You know, it's just like he and what he did is he went from polar opposites at the same speed that normal people go from reasonable positions. And for some reason, how he presented them, it made you like you had to be right in the thick of it and really have it like have your argument on the tip of your tongue if you were going to be able to refute him and be like, look, just yesterday you said this was the worst idea ever. But most people were so excited that like he's not berating them suddenly that they were just like, yay, he's excited about my idea. You know, he was, you know, and that's that character, that's that charisma that he got away with. And he, you know, it's, you know, John Sculley, he is the class, you know, I've been reading about John Sculley, this is why I keep bringing him up. But he you know, he kept patting his ego and making him feel like this great innovator and designer, even though like after a few months Steve Jobs is like, yeah, I hate this guy, he's dumb. You know, oh, It just is like, you know, Steve Jobs could make you feel like a genius, and so you'd forgive him for calling you a complete moron the day before. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know that, and they've lost that, and so it's like suddenly all of their advances are becoming what they are, which is impressive engineering feats, but just iterative improvements. And people just don't appreciate it for, well, it's just an iterative improvement. Why should I get excited about that? No, you don't understand. It's called FaceTime. It's not just Skype that Google has had for a year now. You know, mm-hmm. It's the Steve Jobs factor. You know, I don't think that the product line is decreasing. I don't think they're making fewer missteps. I think they just don't have the spin that Steve Jobs brought to it. You know, Ping went from the coolest invention, you know, the new social network that everybody would want to be in, you know, be in on, to, you know, dying a terrible death in a matter of a year under Steve Jobs.
Yeah, true.
But
yeah,
I don't know.
Very interesting. So you said you had some questions about some monitors.
Yes, I do. So, thank you for, I didn't highlight stuff. So, so I'm looking into getting a monitor. I have a 15-inch laptop, works pretty well. I actually don't mind watching videos and doing games on it, on that size, but I really don't like doing graphic editing, and I really don't like doing programming on it. It's just, it's not big enough. I like more real estate, 'cause I like having multiple windows open and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I have an HDMI output on my computer. Works really well. I like it. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking about getting a larger monitor. I've been offered to be given a larger monitor in honor of my turning 26 years of age. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of did some shopping today, and I stumbled upon one that seems like a really good deal, and I want to get your instincts on it.
Sure.
So this is what it is. It is a so it's a 27-inch monitor, which is like way bigger than I expected I'd be able to afford. But this is kind of a screaming deal. It's available at Fry's Electronics. It's got a really high display. I can't remember specifically right now. Okay, here we go. I'm finally pulling up the information. So it's 1080p. It's got 2-millisecond refresh rate. It's got DVI, VGA, HDMI in. The manufacturer is AOC, which I don't have any idea what that is, or who that is. Mm-hmm. But it's got really good reviews. They say it's got a 60,000 contrast ratio, but it's a dynamic contrast ratio, which I'm told is like a completely useless
number
measurement. Yeah, because they say the static measurement's really good, but the dynamic is like because the static is basically they turn an LED on and then they turn it off and they measure the difference. Whereas dynamic is like it's a range of light over time, given its contrast to different lights and stuff. And so it's like the eye can't really tell. And so it's kind of low compared to other like super high quality ones that are like, we've got a million ratio or contrast ratio, or like 10 mil. I saw one with a 10 million and I was like, wow, 60,000 is pretty low. And then I was reading online, and they're like, from what I could tell, they're like, honestly, if it was made after 2006, you can't tell the difference. Which I was like, well then. For those of you who don't know, contrast ratio is basically the ratio of how bright the brightest light is versus how dark the darkest dark is. So when most monitors, when the black is on, if let's say you have an all black monitor, your room still lights up because it's actually kind of a grayish black in reality. And so a super high contrast ratio Could have like ultra bright LEDs and still kind of light darks, or it could just have super dark darks and regular level whites. So it kind of goes back and forth. But you know, tell me, what do you think? 27
so,
inch.
So I have a couple thoughts, and I guess I need to paraphrase it with. My primary experience has been with HP monitors. I have a 22-inch one that I got for myself. That's the consumer version. And then I also have a 24-inch right next to it, which I use with my work laptop. It's their business version of it. And what I can tell you is that they're both good. The work one has a really weird thing, and I haven't tried it with other computers, just two. But the screen crawls in the sense that like the image will actually move down over time, and then I had to hit this like auto refresh button real quick. And I hit it maybe once a week. That's it. And it takes 10 seconds, and then it – and I mean – but I'm talking like – it moves 10 pixels.
Weird.
Yeah, just enough where after a while I'm like, this is weird. Part of my start, I can't see the bottom of my start button anymore. And so,
right.
You know, I hit the button, wait 10 seconds, back to normal, no problems. You know, and it's probably just a weird quirk of the actual monitor itself. My personal 20-inch one has been awesome. Haven't had any issues with it whatsoever. I'm going to knock on wood right now. You know, it looks nice. It's adjustable, that kind of stuff. I would recommend. So I guess all that to say, is they are good. And so I would go on to, hpshopping.com, go under accessories, monitors, and look at those specs. So you can do some compare and contrast,
interesting
with
okay.
those. And, but at the end of the day, take your laptop to Fry's, plug it in, play with the settings, see if it looks good. Because I have seen other monitors, not ones that I've owned, where you just look at the screen and you go, really? You put up with that? You know, in 2 seconds I could have told you that was garbage and, you know, move on to a different one because it stretches the screen all weird-like. And, you know, so if you got an HDMI cable, bring it in with you. You know, they'll let you, you know, they'll put tape on
that's
it or
actually,
whatever they do.
That's a really good idea.
And then just, you know, play solitaire or Minesweeper or whatever it is that you play, and you know, just try it out for a bit. There's always like model, you know, four models set up to play with, and like I said, you'll probably have to play with the settings because whatever they're set at, they always seem to be weird too, which I don't understand. But And I guess as a general principle, what I have found is that you will never, ever, ever talk to anybody who goes, I bought a monitor that was way too big.
Right.
Those people do not exist. You will only hear people like myself going, yeah, I probably should have spent the extra $200 and bumped up to the 27 instead of sticking with the 22.
Yeah. So can I give you the price on this thing?
Yeah, sure.
$250.
It's a good price.
Yeah. Yeah, for a 27-inch monitor.
So
yeah.
I would still, you know, for that rate, I would still go test it out because you still don't want to waste $250.
No, yeah, definitely. And but that's, I never even thought about that. But yeah, that's.
But I also know, HP's 27-inch is $300 online.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah, after a $100 discount, I don't know how you earn that. There's asterisks everywhere.
Interesting.
So percentage shows earnings after applicable rebates. So for some reason, you get a rebate. It's just instantly. There you go. So it's like Amazon.
Nice.
It's like a fake discount. So, you know, all that to say, $250 is a good price. It doesn't sound like it's a killer price, to be honest. But
you're hurting my feelings right now. Yeah. I haven't seen anything that gets cheaper than that though. I mean, it's just, unless I'm going to wait, you know, if I'm going to wait for Thanksgiving, yeah, I guess it makes sense for me to wait for Thanksgiving, but
Right. Well, and yeah, they probably won't discount the high-end one as much. You know, it'd be some low-end one that you really
Yeah,
honestly don't want.
they'll have
But
five of them that they put on sale as loss leaders.
yeah.
Ugh.
So honestly, when I'm looking at monitors, that's how that's how I think about it. Yeah, the specs are good, and you know, obviously, you want a nice resolution, and you know, blah blah blah. You don't need to go like with an Apple 27 incher. That's like way too expensive. But I would also say, you know, 27's good, 30's better.
Well, my biggest thing is 27 for now is it's about all
Yeah,
I
no,
can really manage from a space perspective.
right, yeah, no, I understand. So once again, the general principles, you know, use the specs to kind of to filter out ones, and then bigger's as a general rule is better. Especially this is something that you're not going to have for a year. You're probably going to have it. Like for mine, I've had mine for 5 years now, and it's not going anywhere. I mean, it's on its second computer now. And you know, so you're gonna probably have it for a while, assuming you don't drop it or break it. And then and then actually play around with it, plug it in. I knew when I got this one, I had played with other HP monitors, and so I knew it was gonna be good when I got it. PS, I may not represent HP, but I do get an HP discount, so if this one does not meet your expectations when you play with it, give me a call.
I will.
Yeah, so anything else going on with your life besides entering Q2 of your life?
My century, yeah. No, not really. I'm integrating over to a new server. I made the leap finally.
Wow, congratulations.
And
Who were you
it's
with
it,
and who are you going with now?
I was with GoDaddy, and I'm
Yeah.
moving to IX web hosting because they're not the cheapest, but what they offer, their super pack. Everybody has like three packages, and they have different deals that come with it. And IX Web Hosting, I thought had the best offering in that you get like tons of free space, or unlimited free space, unlimited free bandwidth, unlimited, this and that, 15 dedicated IP addresses, and they were. They were just really reasonable. And they had like a $10 or 10% discount for your first year, and all sorts of crazy stuff. But so it came down to it's like I was going month to month with GoDaddy, and they were way more expensive than prepaying for a whole year. And when I looked compared prepaid for a year of GoDaddy versus prepay a year of IX
IX.
web hosting, it just was like it became a no-brainer. And not to mention the fact that I'm still, I'm not a big fan of the fact that GoDaddy was a big supporter of SOPA, and other anti-freedom on the internet type policies. So
So to continue this commercial, I actually use IX Web Hosting, which I'm pretty sure you knew that.
you
And
guys need to pay us, by the
yeah,
way, IX Web Hosting.
but what I do is I do the hosting through them, but I actually have all my domains registered with GoDaddy because they're pretty cheap.
That's kind of how I was gonna set it up, actually. I
Yeah.
wasn't gonna move my
I think they
registration
give you a
over.
free domain or something like
They
that.
gave me three free domains. I'm excited.
Yeah, they start off
I
with
got
that, and then
the.
they slowly take them away from you. So,
They do?
yeah, or at least they did for me. I think I started off; it was either two or three, and now I'm down to one. So,
You sure
which
you
I
can
just
use
slowly,
them?
I literally, I called them up and said, "Well, what's up with this? You're gonna charge me $24 a year when I could do $10 a year at GoDaddy? Why would I stick with you?" And the guy was literally like, "I don't know, I wouldn't." It's like, all right.
Well, at least he's honest.
Yeah. I was like, well, there you go. I was expecting like some sort of, well, it's integrated and you get security and we don't do raunchy commercials.
Well,
No.
basically there were, well, one of GoDaddy's big changes, they're trying to
They're
change their
trying.
image on that one right now, and they have. If you go to their main page, it's there's not a some hot chick just sitting there like, hanging out on the front page anymore. You know, like, oh, okay, they're actually making a move.
Oh, yeah, it's nice and boring now.
But they're making a concert. Yeah. You know what, though? That's kind of what I want from my web servers. Like, as people have pointed out,
I like they got rid of all
the
heavy graphics. Man, their website was horrible.
Oh, dude, it was so slow. It had some cool functionality, I thought, but it was not a very well-designed website by any means. They've really cleaned it up. It's a lot better now. But in the end, they're still more expensive, and you know, you know, and they don't give as good of a deal.
Welcome to the party.
Oh baby, yeah. So, IX, here I come. Now I just have to do the hard work of. I did the easy thing, which was pay them. Now I have to do the hard thing, which is migrate all of my websites over. And the one I'm terrified of is Praetorian Chronicles. That one's going to be a nightmare because it's. I mean, actually, it might be pretty easy because it's like four PHP documents and a database. But if it doesn't work. Oh my gosh, it's going to be a nightmare.
Hey, if you're having trouble, give me a call on that one as well, and I'm going to help you.
I'd appreciate that.
Cool.
Yeah, so that's where I'm at.
Cool beans. I spent yesterday out at the beach at a high school church event. We call it Beach Olympics, and basically there's 100 students out there and 8 teams, and they competed in different activities. One of them we call the China Dig, which is dig a hole as deep as you can, build a pile as high as you can, and we measure the difference between the two, and the biggest one wins.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so that's one of them. Totally goofy. The winner was 6'4".
Oh, that's impressive.
And they literally, they have 15 minutes. Maybe 20 to do it. So it's go. And then it's immediately... You run over to the next one, which is some sort of relay called build and destroy. Again, it's like you build a 12-inch pile of sand, and then the next person comes and has to flatten it, and then the next person has to build it again, and you know, just goofy
things. Man.
Yeah, and then we do we do capture the flag, and that's a massive game. It's a square, and then it's put into 4 different sections. And so it's like 4-way capture the flag. It's crazy, to say the least. other totally made-up games and fun stuff. And then eventually we do make it out into the ocean and have them running around and doing laps and things in the water, which is cool. But it was a lot of fun just hanging out. And summer's coming down to a close, finishing up projects here. And kind of so I'll be able to hunker down when it starts to actually rain again and you know, I feel good about everything that I accomplished this summer, which is good.
Nice.
Always good. Then I'll get back to programming and living the inside life again instead of, you know, being outside.
Welcome back.
Yeah, it'll be good. I can work on my pale skin once again. But, yeah. That's it. Cool beans, man. Well, happy belated birthday again.
I appreciate that.
First day of the rest of your life. Just remember that. And so everyone else,
it almost sounds profound when people say that.
Almost. So everyone else, thank you for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my birthday brother is Matthew Furlow, and we will talk next time. Okay.
We're live.
Oh, why do you gotta... Okay, look. We need to, unspoken rule. We're not gonna ever ask that question.
Well, or that could just be your thing.
That could just be our thing.
5
Come
years from
on.
now. So does this mean we're alive now?
Let's just, how unprofessional can we make this?
Oh
Are we live? I
man.
still got something in my teeth.